Advisory Committee meeting. Thank you. Staff, please call the roll so we can establish quorum.
At this time, I'm only asking those VZAC members attending in person to respond by saying here when I call your name. I want to remind you to unmute your microphones by pushing the button on the base prior to responding. Alternates, please also state your name if you are attending on behalf of a VZAC representative. Tracy Phelps?
Here.
Rosenzweig?
Here.
Craig Pinder? Ted Goodenough?
Here.
Joan Olivia, Joanne Scaria?
Here.
Fadi Nassar?
Here.
JC Beery?
Here.
David Willich?
Here.
Gene Matthews is absent. Bruce Guyton?
Here.
Michael Owens? Christian Santa Gonzalez?
Here.
John Roach? Larry Wallace?
Here.
Amy Alvarez is absent. Stephanie Thoburn?
Present.
And I will note that, just for the record, that Craig Pinder has joined us.
Okay. Are there any modifications to the agenda?
Yes, Madam Chair. The following members have requested VZAC permission to participate remotely. Michael Owens has requested permission to join us virtually due to staffing shortages at the school district. And he has joined us online.
Okay. Are there any members who have objections to Michael participating remotely? Seeing none, we approve that him to be participate remotely. Please note his attendance.
Yes, ma'am.
So the next item is the minutes for June 2nd, 2022. Are there any changes? Any modifications to the minutes? We looked at them and have any. So do I have a motion?
So moved.
That's Bruce. Do we have a second?
Ted, I'll second.
Ted is a second. Any discussion? No. All in favor, say aye.
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 Okay, so aye. That was approved. So general public comments and public comments on the agenda items. Instructions on how to provide public comment are included in the agenda. Staff, have any general comments been received?
Not at this time, Madam Chair.
Okay, thanks. Okay, comments from the board. We want to welcome Bruce. Hi, Bruce. Bruce Guyton. And Chris Walker was recently appointed from PromTran. Is he here today?
No.
Oh, he's your alternate. Okay. We're glad to see you. Okay. Although I do like Yash. Okay. Just tell him that. I do miss Yash. So,
yeah.
So please tell him, please give him our hellos. So, and I know that, we have a little bit of some changes here. So if we wanted Andrew, if you wanted to, I thought he had something to say.
Sure. Good morning, everyone. Andrew Euler, Deputy Director of Program Development. So when I say that we want to have our welcome of Brian Ruscher onto the TPA staff as our pedestrian bicycle coordinator. He's taken over as liaison for your committee, somebody you're already familiar with. We're excited to have him on staff, a lot of experience, and obviously had a lot of experience on this committee as well. And then also, in that position, he'll be doing the Transportation Alternatives Program and overseeing everything with pedestrian bicyclists.
So, welcome. Brian.
Thank you very much. Before I get started on the rest of my liaison report, were there any other comments from the rest of the board or from the committee?
I didn't have any.
I think Ted.
Oh, Ted. Mr. Goodenough.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just my usual monthly reminder. I'm Ted Goodenough. I'm representing the community of the disabled. And if you are presenting and you choose to wear a mask, please wear a clear one so that people can read your lips. And if you're presenting a slideshow with graphics, pictures, charts, tables, or anything, please, for those on a cell phone who are not using their camera, or those who are visually impaired or blind, please describe those things to us. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other comments from the committee? It's a short week, so we didn't have as much to say, but the next item is for public comments. Are there any public comments or questions?
There are no public comments at this time, Madam Chair.
Okay. So the liaison report.
Thank you. Just give my staff a minute to pull up the PowerPoint. So that first item has already been covered. Thank you for the introduction, Andrew. I appreciate the kind words, and thank you all for continuing to serve on VZAC. I look forward to working with you as your liaison and coordinator. I also want to offer congratulations to the town of Jupiter. They passed their Vision Zero resolution on June 7th. So congratulations, Stephanie, to you and your team for pushing that forward. We appreciate that, and we look forward to working with you on that effort. The Port of Palm Beach has a public comment period open for the master plan that they have been working on for some time. Comments are due today. So if you would like more information, I would strongly suggest you to go to the website indicated on the slide, planportofpalmbeach.com. The League of American Bicyclists also has a startup grant in the amount of $1,500 for to support the creation of bicycle-friendly communities. Applications are due in about a week. I would encourage you to visit the website listed in the liaison report. It's a little bit long, so I'm not going to go through and read the URL. The FDOT has a local road safety workshop. This is where communities can learn a little bit more about developing safety projects. That workshop is going to be on July 26th. At 1 p.m., there is a website listed, palmbeachtpa.org/FDOT D4 workshop, where you can learn more information and register. Again, I would strongly encourage you to participate in this effort. It's really good to see our partners working on these things. We encourage participation from all the municipalities. There are two federal grants which are currently open for applications, the first of which is the Safe Streets and Roads for All grant program. This is intended to support local communities developed comprehensive safety action plans and implementation of safety action plan items. So the first year, this is going to be a five-year program. They're going to focus on planning grants for Vision Zero action plans, also referred to as comprehensive safety action plans. Please encourage your staff, peers, to look at doing this. It's possible to partner with your MPOs as well on the applications. So if anyone is interested, please reach out to me and I'll be happy to have a conversation with you all and discuss that further. The second grant is the Reconnecting Communities Grant. Its deadline is October 13th. That grant is intended to help reconnect communities that were previously disconnected by transportation infrastructure. So for those of you who are unaware, highway programs, for example, had very adverse impacts on some communities. This grant program is intended to help reconnect the infrastructure in those areas. More information is available at transportation.gov. We have our TPA governing board meeting will be held on July 21st at 9 a.m. You all know how to find our website and how to participate in those. So I'd encourage you all to watch that live. And lastly, we have a mobility options video that Melissa's team has put together, and we're going to go ahead and play that for you now.
Palm Beach County is home to beautiful beaches, diverse culinary experiences, exciting entertainment, and more. Getting around to experience it all is easy with each of the county's mobility options, from buses to trains and everything in between. PalmTran is Palm Beach County's public transit system, with buses from Jupiter to Boca Raton and Palm Beach to the Glades. Palmtran offers 32 routes to take you across the county and on demand with the GoGlade service. Paratransit services are also available through Palmtran Connection. Tri-Rail is South Florida's commuter train connecting Palm Beach, Broward, and Miami-Dade counties. Tri-Rail offers 6 stops from Mangonia Park to Boca Raton within Palm Beach County. Trains run every day and connect all the way to Miami International Airport. For a higher speed service, check out Brightline. With stations from West Palm Beach to Fort Lauderdale and Miami, you can experience all of South Florida without the stress of traffic. Be sure to check out the first and last mile connections across the county too, including Brightline Plus and Brightbike, the West Palm Beach trolleys, and local circulators like Circuit in West Palm Beach and Freebie in Delray Beach. If you need door-to-door service, local taxi providers and on-demand services like Uber and Lyft can take you where you need to go. In addition, try walking and bicycling in our beautiful county as an active and healthy mode of transportation. Next time you're in Palm Beach County, try one of the many multimodal transportation options to get around. With so many choices, it's easy to go car-free. To learn more about all of the mobility options in Palm Beach County, head to palmbeachtpa.org/mobility.
Thank you. That concludes my report. Are there any questions?
No questions, but that was fabulous. I really liked how you used the drone perspective. It made it very energetic. You know, you wanted to watch it. A lot of those things, some of those informational things, is just information, but it really draws you in. So it was really good, I thought. So any other questions on the, I had one question on the grant. The Safe Streets and Roads, is this a new grant program?
Yes. Okay. It is provided through the most recent infrastructure law. It is going to be a 5-year grant program. There is construction money available for roadway projects. The FHWA has indicated on their webinars that the first year is a emphasis area for planning, because there are certain criteria that they have for comprehensive safety action plans, which they want to see before you implement those projects. So there's 9 indicators, and that's why the first year is an emphasis on either updating your comprehensive safety action plans or on creating one in your community. And then after that, you can apply for implementation action grants in the following years. There is a federal contribution. I believe they typically want most projects to be at least $200,000, and there is a local match requirement of at least 20%.
Oh, okay. You know, just for everyone, this year we did a walk audit with the TPA for a neighborhood, a low-income neighborhood that's walkable to an elementary school. And unfortunately, it's not a strategic priority for us. But what we found was there are no sidewalks, kids are walking in the street, and it's just a big mess. But I've pounded the pavement for funding. And because it's not a strategic priority and we have other priorities, I think this is a really good option. So I'd encourage other people to look at it, but I'm definitely going to look at it for Pine Garden South. And we could also maybe use some CDBG money, but just trying to figure out ways to do that. And we were looking at what Lake Worth did with their alleys and putting in paths. It's just a good exercise to look at these things. And I know we go over them really quickly, but I think it's important for us to see how they can work and function.
And they've done a very good job at publishing their webinars and their slides. And I would encourage you to go and look at those. And if you're interested in applying, I mean, there is a match component that is kind of, obviously we work off of annual budgets, and that's already more or less predetermined for many of us. But if there is an opportunity to work with maybe your CRA or other partner agencies, I encourage you to look at those opportunities because I think it's easy to, you know, once you start, it's easy to continue down the path and build that momentum.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I really like the way how you split it all up so we could digest it a little bit better. So the next item is to replace you, Brian, because we need a VZAC vice chair. And so at this time, pursuant to section 5.3.B of the TPA's operating procedures, additional elections may be held as necessary if an officer cannot carry out their duties and complete the remainder of the appointed term. Since Brian resigned, is unable to complete, a new vice chair will need to be elected to serve for the remainder of the calendar year. So are there any public comments before?
Not at this time, Madam Chair.
Okay, so I'd like to open the floor to nominations for vice chair. Also, I wanted to note that John Roach expressed interest in serving, and actually that was going to be my nomination, was John Roach. But are there any other nominations? No, seeing none. Okay, well, otherwise we'll close the nominations and what do they call that? It's since there's no other, he automatically gets, do we need a vote?
The word that you're looking for is ratified.
Ratified? Okay. Really? Okay.
But if you, if you wouldn't mind having a okay. hand vote.
I vote helpful. For John. Anybody
I'm
else?
Sorry. I'm sorry. So you just need a motion and a seconder to close out the item.
Okay. Do you have a first?
I'll second your motion. Oh, I'm sorry. I'll make the motion.
Did I make a motion? I think I made a motion. Okay. Sorry, Joanne.
I will make a motion to nominate John.
Okay. Thank you. So I'm first, second. Thank you. Show of hands then. I see everybody's hands up. Larry's not allowed to vote, so that's okay. So John Roach, you are vice chair. Thank you. And it was just a coincidence that I did not get him on the agenda, just so you know. okay, so then the next item is the adoption of the fiscal year 2024 through 2028 list of priority projects. And Jason Price, the TPA TIP coordinator, will present this item.
Yes. So now we're moving on to the action items part of the agenda. So good morning, everyone. Today, I'm going to present to you the list of priority projects for fiscal year 24 through 28. And this list of priority projects is a document that's incremental to developing the Transportation Improvement Program, which is our five-year program that lists all of the projects that we implement throughout the next 5 years in conjunction with FDOT. So this is a part of that. And the list of priority projects is the prioritization document that we utilize, and we integrate that into our mission to collaboratively plan, prioritize, and fund the transportation system. And this is the prioritization step in our mission. The Transportation Improvement Program, the TIP document I'll refer to, has a development process where it first starts with project development, where we develop projects with our stakeholders, FDOT, local municipalities, and then we also offer grant programs. And that's where we kind of solicit and identify the types of projects that we'd like to see to be integrated into the list of priority projects, which is the next step. So this next step is the list of priority projects, where now we start to vet and rank all of the projects and incorporate that into a document that you see before you today that I'll go over. And there's three main components of the list of priority projects, and that's the two annual competitive grant programs, local initiatives and transportation alternatives, as well as state road modifications. Now, with this list of priority projects. This will then, once it's adopted by our governing board, will then go to FDOT, and they'll take this document and integrate it, look at it for cost feasible, and apply funding to the projects that we provide to them and incorporate it into their draft tentative work program. And that draft tentative work program is then provided back to us, and then we begin the transportation improvement program development process following that. So that's the overview of the that's an overview of the process. Now, to assign some dates to that process, here in July, we'll go over the list of priority projects and approve it in July. And then later on in late fall or late summer in the fall, we'll see, we'll provide it to FDOT after July, and then they'll incorporate it, like I mentioned, in that time frame in summer, fall, into their draft tentative work program, and then review it, integrate these projects, and then we'll give you an analysis of what we find in the draft tentative work program of how they did with integrating the projects that we provided them in the list of priority projects. And then following that, the new year in 2023, we'll begin the development of the transportation improvement program in May and June, and then start operating under it. So the whole process starts over again. So as I mentioned, the list of priority projects has three main categories: state road modifications, local initiatives, and transportation alternatives. And they all have different sources of funding, different funding amounts per program, and the source of the projects comes from different places. The state road modifications is more driven towards the LRTP, our long-range transportation plan, and other modifications that we find opportunities to integrate into the state roadway system, as well as the local initiatives and transportation alternatives program. So from this point on, we're going to go into a little more detail on all three of these programs, first starting with the state road modifications. And I'd like to invite Andrew Euler. He's going to go over the state road modifications and go over the types of projects and what we're asking FDOT to provide.
Thank you, Jason. So yes, I'll be going over the state road modifications. The purpose of this program is really to construct and enhance state roadways to advance the TPA's vision. And so, as Jason mentioned, the funding for this is really all state funding. It comes from state gas taxes and a few other state revenue sources. And it's required to be spent on state roadways. Typically, it's around $20 million a year that we are anticipating to receive. That fluctuates year to year, depending on the projects and the cost of those. It could be higher or lower, also depending on sort of the other priorities that the state has that uses these same state funding sources. So think about our strategic intermodal system, our state roadways and operations, and a few other categories that also receive funding from state funds. The products that we've typically had in this and historically have been a lot of roadway capacity projects. If you think about recently more State Road 7 and extension, and then also in the plan is the Atlantic Avenue widening. But we're also seeing a lot of other types of products, and we're trying to push our vision towards safety. So we have safety products in here, complete streets, transit projects, and then signal technology and resiliency. Typically, this is products coming into the new fifth year of the program. So our current TIP upcoming here is going to be all the way up to fiscal year 27. So a lot of the new funding you'll see for this next priority list will be going into fiscal year 2028. So that's really where most of the larger requests will end up. I'm just going to go through a few highlights about what we're requesting for ones that are not yet fully funded. So all the requests I'll mention are ones that still has money that's remaining to be programmed for the TIP. The first is the Atlantic Avenue widening from Lyons Road to Jog Road. The western portion of this is already fully funded from State Road 7 to Jog, or to Lyons, sorry. And that's going to be coming up in a few years here. What's left to fund for the Atlantic Avenue widening on the east from Lyons Road to Jog Road is the construction cost. So our main request is to prioritize the funding for construction, and if possible, to accelerate the funding for right-of-way. Next is the US 1 Enhanced Transit and Multimodal Corridor Facilities Projects. A couple of years ago, we completed the US 1 Multimodal Corridor Study, which is the entire length of US 1 in Palm Beach County. And there's a series of segments in that plan that has concepts that we're pushing forward over the past few years. And so three of them I wanted to mention that we're looking for funding for in this list of priority projects includes construction funding for the land repurposing project in Boca Raton, construction funding for a complete streets reconstruction project in West Palm Beach, design funding for land repurposing project in Lake Worth Beach, a pending FDOT's approval of that land repurposing. Next is our Okeechobee Boulevard Enhanced Transit and Multimodal Corridors facility. So similar to US 1, we have a study underway right now that we're looking to finalize this year. And you all will see a presentation on that come October. And we go into all the committees for their recommendations. And then it will go to the governing board in October as well. And that will be the final recommendation for that study. And then with that recommendation, we're looking to go to the next phase of this corridor study, which is a feasibility study by FDOT. So they will look at the corridor based on our recommendation and see whether those recommendations are feasible when it comes to right-of-way considerations and a few other considerations in that study. We're also looking to fund enhanced transit shelters on the corridor. There's already design fundings for enhanced transit shelters in the TIP document. This is looking just to have the construction funding also funded in the next 5 years. Next is the Lake Worth Road corridor, similar to the other ones, but this one's gonna be also sort of studied in the next year here along with the other corridors that we have not yet studied as one package. But right now what we're looking to have prioritized, just like we have on US 1 and Okeechobee Boulevard, is transit signal prioritization. Right, so giving that prioritization to transit vehicles and also emergency vehicles where possible, and have that coincide with the US 1 and Okeechobee Boulevard transit center prioritizations. And the last one I want to mention for state road modifications is on the final part of our list for this program for state road modifications, you'll see a lot of Boca Raton and Palm Beach County traffic signal requests for hardening their traffic signals to make them more resilient to storms, and to also upgrade the technology. The one I wanted to mention that we're looking for requests for is the federal highway at Spanish River Boulevard and Boca Raton as one of those projects. But there's also a series of other projects that are still not fully funded when it comes to intersection improvements. That's all I have for you. I'll turn it back over to Jason.
Thank you, Andrew. So now we'll move into our annual competitive grant programs, which is the local initiatives and transportation alternatives. The first one for local initiatives, that provides about $22 million in federal funds on an annual basis, and projects can receive up to $5 million as a maximum per project, and a minimum is required of $250 per project. The timeline for getting to construction in this and local initiatives is it's expected to have the design completed in year 3, and then you receive the construction funding in year 5. And the types of projects you'll find these projects, the only types of projects that are eligible are on the federal aid eligible roadway network. And that's the it's a pretty expansive network throughout the Palm Beach County. And you can find it on our palmbeachtpa.org. website. We have a map and we have all of the federal aid eligible roadway network listed. The types of projects that we find in local initiatives are more geared towards complete streets, transit capital like new rolling stock for SFRTA or new electric buses for Palmtran, and then non-motorized infrastructure like bike and pedestrian safety projects, sidewalks and bike lanes, and also freight efficiencies. The request that the TPA is making of FDOT is first to update the programming of our SU funding to support the TPA planning and administration. And that's to be consistent with our recently adopted fiscal year 23 through 24 UPWP. And that's our operating plan. That's the plan that we utilize every 2 years to fund our planning studies and then operate the agency and support staff as well. The other, and so that's incorporated into the local initiatives funding for SU funding, which is both used to construct projects and then the planning operations for the agency. The other ask is to apply funding for the 7 projects that were submitted in the previous local initiatives grant cycle, which was successful in getting 7 projects that were vetted and deemed eligible to be constructed and funded by FDOT. And I'd like to go over all 7 of those projects now, so you know the projects that we're requesting funding for. The first project, and these are tables, but I'm going to go through all of the lines and all the information on the tables for the benefit of the group as instructed. So the first one here is a 10-foot shared use pathway and missing sidewalks that is being considered on Southwest 18th Street for Boca Raton. That's the top rated project of the 7. And that's followed by Tri-Rail. Tri-Rail's request for new rolling stock. The next project is a 5-foot designated bike path, bike lane, and an 8-foot sidewalk on Gardens Parkway for Palm Beach Gardens. And that's to create more connectivity on Gardens Parkway to connect to their mall as well. And the next project is PalmTran with the purchase of 4 electric buses in their initiative to convert their existing fleet to an electric bus fleet. And they've done this over the past several years, so they're really on track to meet the mark of transitioning their bus fleet to an electric bus fleet. Excuse me, I just need some water. So there's 3 more projects. The next project is a 10-foot shared use pathway and new sidewalks in Delray Beach along Barwick Road. And they have other projects on Barwick Road, and this is just another further extension of Barwick Road further north of where they've implemented other projects through their grant program. Following that is PalmTran. They're also seeking to improve bus stop improvements on some of their tier 1 bus stops. And those are all their high use bus stops. Through their data collection process, they've been able to calculate their ons and offs and the higher use bus stops. And they'd like to improve those bus stops countywide. And the last project for local initiatives is Indian Trail Improvement District. They're seeking to install Seminole speed tables on a collection of roadways in Indian Trail Improvement District, and that's along Temple Boulevard, Hall Boulevard, and 140th Avenue. And that concludes the presentation, the portion for local initiatives. Now we'll go over transportation alternatives, which is the smaller of the 3 programs that I'm presenting today, or that has been presented today. And it provides about $3.3 million in federal funds with a maximum of $1 million per project and a minimum of $250,000. And this is a 3-year program as opposed to a 5-year program like local initiatives. And so the design is expected to be completed in year 1, and construction is in year 3, and construction funding is received in year 3. And this program incorporates the federal aid eligible roadway network in addition to local roads. So this is the ideal program to fund local roadway projects of the 3 programs. This is the one that's eligible for local roadway improvements in addition to the federal aid eligible roadway network. And the types of projects are really bike and pedestrian driven, but they also incorporate complete streets, traffic calming, historic preservation, and safe routes to school. The TPA is asking FDOT, as part of the Transportation Alternatives Program, to fund all 4 projects that were submitted and vetted successfully through FDOT as part of the previous year, the 2022 Transportation Alternatives Application Cycle. And so now, as I did with the local initiatives, I'll go through all 4 of these projects that were submitted and we'd like to see funding for as part of the list of priority projects. The first one being Indian Trail Improvement District. They're seeking to install a 10-foot shared use pathway and expand an existing sidewalk to 8 feet along several roadways here. And that's Hamlin Boulevard, Grapeview Boulevard, and Citrus Grove Boulevard. The next project on the list is for Palm Beach Gardens, and that's to install buffered bike lanes and an 8-foot pathway on the south side of the roadway, completing the pedestrian network on Fairchild Avenue. Following that is Royal Palm Beach, and they're seeking to install pedestrian and bicycle network wayfinding throughout Royal Palm Beach to find the resources within Royal Palm Beach. They have a collection of parks, and just the wayfinding is a way to, and kiosk are just another addition to Royal Palm Beach and completing their network of roadways and resources to find the parks and the things that they have in their municipality. So it's all wayfinding, but it's a mix of wayfinding signs as well as kiosk. And lastly is West Palm Beach. They're seeking to improve 49th Street with ADA curb ramps, sidewalks, traffic calming, as well as bicycle share rows. And so I wanted to provide two resources here. One is for the actual document that lists all of the projects within each one of the programs. And that's you can find that at palmbeachtpa.org/priorities. That'll take you to the list of priority projects document that I'm presenting here today. But you can also find additional information on the three grant programs that we're offering for local initiatives, transportation alternatives, and state road modifications at palmbeachtpa.org/funding to get more information on the grants. And so with that, I'm seeking a motion to recommend adoption of the list of priority projects, and I'll take any questions at this time.
Oh.
Awesome.
We need to get public comment first. If there's any.
At this time, there is no public comment.
Okay. Do we have any member questions or comments, Tracy?
Mine might actually be a public comment because I was sent a text from somebody here at the city of Boca Raton. And that is asking, I think it was the project about Southwest 18th Street. That was the, wasn't TA, it was the, yeah. Nope, wasn't that one either. Yeah, there we go. I guess a lot of the funding for that was, a lot of the cost was getting across the railroad tracks and the improvements there. And we were told that's not able to be funded through the TPA. So this is the questions from Naresh, who's a member of the TAC committee, but he wanted me to ask him, why can't we get funds, SFRTA work related funds for Southwest 18th Street, but they were able to purchase rail cars with funds from the TPA.
Right. And so I'm working through those issues now.
Okay.
With Naresh and FDOT to get clarification. I understand FDOT's position, but I think we can work through that detail and figure out how to fund that portion of the project, because we could flex the funds to FTA, and that's how they purchase the buses and rolling stock. So transit projects can be implemented through local initiatives, and the rail portion of the Southwest 18th Street should be eligible. We just have to work through the details with FDOT to find a way to fund that portion. And part of it is who will do the work and within that right away. So there are some points of clarification to figure out who will do the work within the right away and who would be the responsible charge for that part of the project. And then how do we get the funding? Where does the funding need to go? Does it need to be flexed, or can we keep it as is? And we're going to work out those details and get that part figured out as part of the project, because it is an important part of the project, because it is a path along Southwest 18th Street and it crosses the tracks and those railroad tracks. It's an important crossing to kind of upgrade that crossing. So we'd like to see that as part of the project. And it is a significant cost part of the project. It's about $1 million in total. So it's a significant part. So we're going to work through it and figure out a solution.
Okay.
Right. Mr. Willock.
I saw you describe enhanced transit shelters. I'd seen a line item, I think it was 36 enhanced transit shelters for $8 million, which comes out to about $220,000 per shelter. What are the enhancements that are done to them?
That number will likely change, I think. That's a hard question to answer because I'm not sure.
Hey, were you referencing the ones that were in the state road modifications list or just overall?
It was in the 24 to 28 TIP, I believe. I'm pretty sure it said $8 million allocated for 36 enhanced transit shelters.
Okay. If it's the ones that are related to what you'll see on US 1 corridor, those are going to be more enhanced, as in to the point of like being a premium transit shelter. So level boarding, a few other amenities there, larger shelters to like sort of pave the way for a future service that might be like a premium transit service, such as like a bus rapid transit. And so you'll see a higher level of shelter for that when it comes to some of these main enhanced transit corridors. And then there's tons of other products in there that are from PalmTran for shelters. And those will probably be more standard shelter design. And you see those in the local initiatives and transportation alternatives program. So I'm not sure if that answers your question to any.
I was thinking more on the lines of there would be like fiber optics or solar panels or, additional lighting, maybe informative screens. I was kind of hoping that's where it was going. Right.
Yeah. So enhanced transit shelters could range from a variety of costs. They could be a lot more expensive if you were to do the math of how much they're asking for and the number of shelters. And so the way this document is being presented, there's strike through for the things that will be eliminated and then underlined for the projects that will be added. And what I see here, when I look at it more closely, we are striking out the 36. So it's undetermined how many stations exactly will be a part of the enhanced, those enhanced bus shelters, which is part of the BRT of doing some kind of BRT throughout these corridors. And so I think the number will change. And so that will reflect, so that cost will probably change with how many shelters they have and how much they cost. So I could see how, when you do the math, it's kind of like cheap shelters for enhanced shelters when you.
I was wondering what kind of enhancements were there.
Yeah. And the enhancements could vary.
Saw shares maybe.
Yeah.
And we can get more information on that.
I think as the project develops and they get more closer to the details of this is exactly where the shelters are going to be, and this is the types of shelters we identified as enhanced shelters, we'll likely bring that back and do a presentation or at least provide that information of this is what enhanced transit shelters look like for the benefit of all the committees, so they know what is being installed on in the right of way and how this BRT is kind of taking shape. So I think right now we just don't have that information because we might not be that far along in the planning process, but I need to follow up to figure that out. And then I can get back to you and
see. Okay, yeah, presentation would be great.
Okay.
Thanks, Fadi.
I guess my question is along the same line. I think PalmTran is getting about 10 million from Del I program. I think 5 million for 4 electric buses and 5 million for enhancing shelters. Would that include something like flashers for crossing the road or something outside the immediate kind of shelter? Because these flashers are pretty expensive. A lot of them, usually when you have bus stops on both sides of the road, you do have pedestrian activity. Do you know if these are included in those 5 million? Again, it's a big amount.
It is not included. There have, when they submitted the grant application, then they requested 5 million for the bus stop improvements. What I received was they want to improve the top tier, the highest used bus stops first. So they have a number of bus stops. I don't know the exact number, but there's quite a few bus stops out there on both sides of the roadways for all of the transit routes. So the highest, what they're calling the tier one bus stops, will be the ones that will be improved first. And it won't include flashers or anything outside the footprint of the shelter, is how they've applied for the grant. And that's how it will be implemented. It won't implement stuff outside of the bus shelter itself.
If I can, we will request more information regarding the enhanced shelters. I know that it's typical for those types of shelters to have electrification information systems associated with them, so the cost can be substantially higher. They typically include real-time boarding, nighttime illumination, and they might also have, you know, level boarding, which impacts the right-of-way as well. So there would be geometric changes that potentially could be impacted, but not necessarily being a pedestrian in facility, it might have an impact on the road. So we can request more information for those specifically, but they are more costly because they are a higher standard of service for that type of element.
Yeah, I mean, that was my follow-up point, because I know in Europe, wherever you have a bus stop, you usually have indication how many minutes for the next bus. Hopefully, at least this amount of money will be used for something similar. Again, we are all for improving, you know, bus service, bus shelter, bus safety, all of these things. But I still believe that, you know, luckily in Palm Beach County, we still have affordable parking. And I think we need to invest a little bit more in maybe circulators in many cities, so we can reduce traffic within the downtown. So hopefully, you know, as you go towards future years, we'll have a more balanced approach. It's nice to have 5 electric buses, but also it's nice to have some circulator where we don't have in locations. This is regarding Dell I program. I had a question regarding what Andrew presented for, you know, the transit alternative studies. And unfortunately, I'm going to be voting against, because we believe that, you know, there's some important step being missed in that, which is a real simulation of the impact on traffic when you repurpose lanes. We know this has not been done adequately, just focus on transit. So hopefully, you know, before you provide any kind of preferred alternative to DOT, you really evaluate what the impact on traffic would be, which include both traffic simulation, but also you may need to do some regional model, sub-area model refinement to provide a more accurate level of analysis. So that's my comments.
Spotty, what item was that in particular, the location you're talking about for repurposing lanes?
It's what Andrew presented, the initial slides. You know, you have the Okeechobee Transit Study, Okeechobee Boulevard. Yeah, I mean, you just passed it. The next one, this one. Now, I understand, you know, for US-1, it's a unique situation. And I mean, the impact on traffic may not be as relevant, because it's more about access, more about serving, you know, commercial. But the other corridor, like Okeechobee, Lake Worth, whatever, I think whenever you take a lane out, we expect a full analysis what the impact would be on traffic. And again, we're not arguing with whatever assumptions for the transit ridership. We accept that, but at least you need to figure out what the impact on traffic should be to provide a more realistic analysis. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Fadi. Mr. Goodenough.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jason, you mentioned in what part of your presentation, an 8-foot wide shared use path. I think we all know I'm not a real fan of shared use. Is that single direction or back and forth? Do you know? It's on one side of the roadway, but is it for, is there another one on the other side?
Yes.
Okay, so it would be single. And the reason I ask is Rosie and I take up about 40 inches. So if it was, you could go either direction round trip on that, it would leave 8 inches for somebody to pass me. And Rosie, because there's people coming the other way, 8 feet on each side sounds right. Much more reasonable.
And through, when people apply for grants, we try to complete the network. Like if you're going to touch a roadway, we'd like to see pedestrian facilities on both sides of the roadway to make it complete. Or if there's constraints on one side of the roadway, at least a wide enough shared use pathway to accommodate two-way traffic, more two-way pedestrian and bicycle activity. Better than just having a wider facility if it's only on one side, as opposed to two sides where you can kind of separate out the directions. So in this particular case, it is on both sides of the roadway. And that's what we advocate for, is putting facilities on both sides of the roadway to make a complete network.
Yeah, and I'm glad that they are on both sides. I still find them, for the community of disabled, very dangerous. There's just too much activity going on. And again, a person who's blind or deaf or on the autism spectrum, it's pretty scary when somebody rides by or runs by and doesn't say anything and doesn't warn you that they're coming and you don't have enough room to get out of the way. So it's something that I'm opposed to. Thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you.
Just real quick, I know Larry wanted to follow up with that.
Thanks, Larry Wallace, FDOT. So I just wanted to clarify for the Boca Raton shared use path, even though it's off system, you know, not on the state road, but I have a vested interest since I live in the area. What are the limits of the shared use path? And like you're mentioning earlier, is it on both sides? And then technically, is a shared use path is considered 12 foot in width?
Right.
So does it vary between like 8 feet to 12 feet, or is the typical, do you have 10 feet? So it's okay. So 10 foot minimum, 12 foot is preferred. So if there's opportunities to increase it to 12 in some portions for maybe passing zones, that could help as well. That's all I had. Thank you.
Sure.
Right. Bruce.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, good.
There have been a few questions regarding the design of the shelters. All of Palm Trans shelters, as most of you know, have exceeded its useful life. We do have shelters that municipalities have built on their own. Palm Beach Gardens one have some very nice shelters, thank you. But the county shelters have exceeded their useful life. A final design has not been determined yet. We're getting ready to go out to RFP for design and engineering. We do have preliminary designs that we're looking at, but nothing has been finalized. We do invite input if anyone has suggestions. So as it relates to a final design, it has not been determined yet, but we can provide you with the preliminary design. And if you'd like to give us input, we would be happy to receive that. And I can leave my card. And there was another question about our shelves. I can't think of it now, but if it comes up, if you'd like for me to entertain it, I will.
All right.
Thank you.
Tracy.
I want to second everything Fadi had to say about taking away lanes or doing a shared lane, and extensive analysis that will need to be done along the arterial and at the at each intersection to assure that capacity isn't lowered. And it was, and the mass transit proposal would work along with regular traffic. I do believe that. And in reference to the Southwest 18th Street, I do believe it was 10 foot minimum. I don't see a reason why we couldn't get 12 feet. There are some locations where it was pretty tight, close to the right of way, and might have to add some curb and gutter or something to that effect for drainage. But I'm not a drainage engineer, and that's kind of going to be a discussion between the drainage engineer and the design engineer whenever that time comes, when that project gets to that point. But the city of Boca Raton would definitely want a 12-foot path, and we'll do everything possible to make sure it is 12-foot.
Did you have something?
Yes, just something, Ryan, to add for the shelter discussion. The enhanced transit shelters have a series of features about them, and I can provide these cost estimates, which we have for each of the station locations. They're just preliminary cost estimates, but they include obviously the shelter structure itself, interior lighting, benches, solar LED lighting, ad boxes, wayfinding, furnishings, including bench, trash receptacle, bicycle rack. And then along with that, there are requirements to improve the area around it. So replacing sod, replacing the sidewalk, ensuring that you have detectable strips for level boarding and whatnot. So if anyone's interested, I can share that information with you all later. Okay. Please reach out by email.
Okay, great. I had a couple of things. One was related to the, I think, Andrew, you had mentioned that there will be additional recommendations coming up on the Okeechobee Boulevard Enhanced Transit Service with multimodal corridor facilities. I understand this was brought up yesterday at the TAC related to, but I would like to know more about what, I remember seeing like different alternatives for light rail, an express bus lane. But I'm just trying to understand a little bit more of what this entails.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So, So we have over the past 2 years, you know, been working on this Okeechobee Boulevard corridor study. And we had a series of meetings and workshops, and I think you've had presentations. We most recently had one a few months ago that had the alternatives. Those included from light rail, dedicated light rail, at grade, above grade, and then bus rapid transit within the median, outside. And then there's also bus rapid transit within the current roadway. And so there's going to be another presentation for you all in October is what we're shooting for, September, October timeframe. And it's going to go to all the committees and then to the board for final adoption of a approved recommendation for that, whatever the alternative comes out of that. And then after that, the next step, as my understanding is, for FDOT to see if that's feasible in that study. I'm not sure if that next step has the full traffic analysis as part of that. I don't know if it does. I think this is probably not, I don't know if this feasibility incorporates that part. I have to get more information on that. But after that feasibility study, then there's additional steps to get to a PD&E and then go into design. So it's a few years out before we even get to that point, but this is just the next step as I understand it. So we'll have our recommended alternative adopted by the board in October. And then after that, we'll work with that in their feasibility study.
Okay, so it's to do more planning studies.
Yeah, it's more planning, yep.
Not based on a solution, got it. And then before we go to Mr. Goodenough, just one other thing. I know Fadi and Tracy, you made very good points about making sure that any lane repurposing for transit addresses impacts on vehicular traffic. But I think like just from a, because our committee, Vision Zero Advisory Committee, is geared towards transit, multimodal and those types of things. I think, you know, there needs to be some sort of discussion, which is why we're all here, on prioritizing transit and prioritizing multimodal, maybe not above, but maybe prioritizing it equivalent to vehicular traffic in different places. I don't think, like in Jupiter, for example, that makes complete sense because we don't have the density, but in certain places where it's density driven and the ridership is higher or there is more need for those transportation disadvantaged to use transit, that those types of ideas of reprioritizing lane repurposing and having lanes for transit should be equivalent to traffic, you know, and the movement of traffic. And that's just my, you know, I don't want to get into a long discussion. I just want to have that opposite discussion as well, that it's important for us to also look at those things. I definitely want us to all look at the traffic implications on repurposing lanes. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that, you know, at some point we have to move the needle and getting off of our, you know, cars. And I drive a Suburban from Jupiter, and I'm like the worst person to probably be saying that, but I just want to say that opposing side bar so that we can have a good, meaningful discussion come from this committee. So, and I saw Mr. Goodenough wanted to speak again.
Thank you again, Madam Chair. It was mentioned wayfinding twice, once with the shelters and once for Royal Palm Beach. Are we talking about maps on a wall, or is it a digital process where I could plug in an earbud and get directions audits with audio or braille, or how is it going to benefit everyone and not just somebody who can look at a map on a wall?
So there's two different things going on here. The transit shelters is completely different. The grant, which I'll stick to for Royal Palm Beach, those are standalone kiosks. There's eight of them, I believe, throughout the city. And I think there is maps and information inside the kiosk, but ADA accessibility is something I could follow up and ensure that they include. To what degree, I'm not exactly sure, but if they ask me for recommendations, we could work with them to find out how they can incorporate more ADA accessible resources within those kiosks, which I am sure that they would be able to accommodate. It's just a matter of cost and the incremental cost, but I feel like they could definitely incorporate that. And I hadn't seen that specifically in their application, but it could certainly be a follow-up request of me to ask them, how do they plan on doing that, accommodating everyone within those kiosks?
Thank you.
Okay. I understand that there's a public comment after we called for public comment. Does the board want to entertain the public comment? Yes, I see yes. Okay, so go ahead.
Awesome. Thank you, Madam Chair. Go ahead, Khursheed.
Good morning. Thank you very much. This is Khursheed Mahiuddin with Palm Beach County Planning Division. I completely support Chair Stephanie's comments on Okeechobee study, Fadi's comments, and Tracy from Boca. Completely support those comments. If the item said feasibility study for all alternatives, then it would have been okay. But if there is a specific alternative that is coming out as an outcome of a planning study, and then you're going to study that, I don't think there's enough analysis at this time to, you know, move forward with that, because we haven't seen ridership numbers and detailed analysis on traffic. Second thing, I did talk to PalmTran regarding those shelters. One of the major on Okeechobee Boulevard, one of the major component was level boarding. And that is an excellent project, especially on Okeechobee. It will reduce a lot of time and improve the transit and increase the, you know, reduce the travel time on transit, which will be quite helpful, especially on this busy corridor on Okeechobee and State Road 7. That is a good project. That's all my comments. Thank you very much.
Okay, so any matter? Oh, I see Bruce. Bruce wants to make a comment.
Sorry. In these kind of projects, as in a lot of projects, aren't you required to comply with the ADA?
Well, yeah, I'm just going to follow up and confirm that.
Determine.
I'm going to follow up with Royal Palm Beach, and I'm going to ask them, are the kiosk ADA accessible? And they'll be ADA accessible in terms of access, but he's talking about the maps and the information inside the kiosk, if there is
any. I understand that.
So I want to make sure that that component of accessibility is also incorporated. And maybe it is. I've just got to confirm it. And if it's not, I make the request. So just to make sure that it's there. I don't know that exactly, because it wasn't in part of the grant application to say we're going to have audible resources to view the map or whatever the ADA accessible resources need to be to get the information within the kiosk in different capacities, like audible or however it's delivered, other than just physically looking at it. How else is the information delivered? I don't really know that. Oh. So I have to find that out in terms of how do you accommodate that? I don't know, I'm not familiar with the technology, but I can't assume that it's going to be there. So I have to ask and make sure. Maybe it's a federal requirement and it has to be there, and that just covers all the bases. But in the application, I didn't really see that level of detail as part of it. And it's just more or less the design of the kiosk and all of the physical assets that will be within the kiosk is what I know of, like trash receptacles, a bench, little things like that is more like the physical aspects of it. So I'm going to follow up and figure it out and follow up with the group.
We have one more comment from Mr. Goodenough.
On the, I need to follow up, and I appreciate that you're going to. It seems to me that in that case, if they're not putting that as a priority in their presentation to us, that they're going to make ADA compliance, then they take a group of citizens and put them in the back of the bus, so to speak. And, you know, that's just, it's a law. ADA is a law. Actually, this is this month, it would be 32 years since it was signed. And unfortunately, people are still not making it a priority. It's secondary, and it should be right up with everything else, just like curb cuts and bowing buses. They need to think about all people, not just a few. Thanks.
Just received a note, just elaborate a little bit further there. Because they're receiving federal funds, they will be required to be compliant with federal law for ADA. So thank you.
All right. So do we have a motion? Oh, wait, I see Mr. Guyton again.
No, just to kind of confirm what Palm Trans position is on ADA. That is always at the forefront of our considerations for any of our projects. As indicated, it's required by FDA, but we have a strong sensitivity to include all of the community, to include those who need the accessibility equipment as it relates to Palm Tran projects. So I just want to make it very clear that we do have a high priority in emphasizing ADA compliance. And we would do it voluntarily, even if it were not a requirement by the federal government. And we are members of different industry-related organizations. Many of our people are on accessibility committees. So in Palm Tran, that is something that is at the forefront of our consideration. Thank you.
Right. Do I have a motion? Oh, Brian, did you want to? No. Do we have a motion? Come on, Bruce. Second. Okay. All right. So all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Those opposed?
Aye.
Nay.
Okay. So two opposed, Mr. Willick and Fadi.
Perfect. And just for our records, could you state for the record why you're dissenting?
For the reasons that Fadi went over.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay, we got that. We can move on to the next item, which is the fiscal year 2023 strategic plan. And Andrew will be back up the TPA Deputy Director of Program Development for the presentation.
Thank you. You said that one well. I stumble upon my title. It's a long one. Good morning again, everyone. I'm going to be going through the draft fiscal year 2023 strategic plan. This is sort of additional activities that we do throughout the year to accomplish our mission and vision, right? So last month we adopted our Unified Planning Work Program. So that sets our next two fiscal years, fiscal year 2023 and 24, on what we do as an agency and what our staff does with their planning activities day to day. This is sort of intertwined in that and goes above and beyond on some additional things we want to focus on to move forward. What you'll see in this is really a lot of streamlining of some of our activities to sort of state around 3 to 5 actions per goal. And I'll be going through them each goal individually. We recently published a fiscal year 2022 annual report that highlights what we've done in the past year. That also includes some of the information on what we did in the 2022 strategic plan for those actions. That was available by print, and then it's also available on our website at palmbeachtpa.org/annual report. That was another one our PR team put together along with the video. So I'll be going through these goals individually. This report, that this strategic plan draft for 2023 that you see in front of you today, it was in your backup, was seen by our executive committee, which is made up of 5 members of our governing board. They met on June 6th to discuss this and provide their recommendations. And so it's going to be presented to you all now and are the committees, and then final adoption is by the board in July, so this month. Our first goal is engage the public. And we had a lot of changes to this section, but really what we're doing is streamlining sort of what the outcomes are. So how we're measuring outcomes is a little bit more clear now. And what I mean by that is we have 5 actions for the sections for engage the public, but they're centered around now outcomes that are all sort of all encompassing when it comes to engaging the public. So our first one deals with how many comments we receive from our different tools, like our maps, our surveys, and other platforms. So we're looking for 500 comments themselves. So direct feedback to the agency on items. The next one deals more with followers and impressions we receive on our media platforms. So how many followers are engaged in our social media platforms? We're looking to have 4,500 followers and then 30,000 impressions per month. So how many times people see our items or click on our items through our media. The next one is how many participants we receive throughout the year at our events. So looking for 2,000 participants. And then the next one is public awareness through media related stories. So having 75 TPA related media stories. So when we have big items that are going to our agendas or other things we're doing with studies, our PR team works on pushing those stories to the media. And then if they cover those count as a media story towards our goal of 75 in a year. And then lastly is one geared towards how many presentations we do to partner agencies and groups. We had a goal of 15 last year, and now we have a goal of 20 this year. So it sort of hits every level of sort of an outcome you can expect for engaging the public. The next goal is plan the system. Many of the ones in this section were struck through. A lot of them were just one-time commitments. That includes an update to our complete streets design guidelines, which are being finalized now and are going to be available pretty soon. I believe we'll have an updated presentation on those when those are completed for you all. We also had a COVID-19 pandemic study on travel patterns that was provided, and it's on our website. That was completed. So those were two that are sort of one and done for updates. So those were taken off the list. We still have 3 actions for this goal. Another one I want to mention is the Vision Zero Action Plan. We updated that last year. So now we're just providing a status update annually as our deliverable. Next is prioritize funding. Our first goal is to create a state road modification scoring system, and our TAC worked through that and created that scoring system. So now that we have a scoring system in place for that, for state roads, we're really looking to try to get some more projects funded and programmed for safety. So using our Vision Zero action plan, our high crash corridors networks, and then our tier one pedestrian bicycle network, identifying projects and trying to have those prioritized as an outcome. So we have a goal of 5 safety projects prioritized. Another one I wanted to mention for this goal's 3 prioritized funding is that we took out the established an application process for safety projects. We're looking to have like a new application project for that process for that. As Brian noted in the liaison report, there's an upcoming FDOT webinar workshop about how locals can get more involved in getting safety projects funded. We're sort of like working through that with FDOT, and that's why this one has been shucking through. We're going to see how that goes and see where we can make sure we're coordinating with you all as the cities and the public on pushing forward safety projects for FDOT. And then the last one for prioritized funding involves how we are pushing legislative priorities and policy positions to the state and federal government. Historically, the past few years, we've had adopted a policy position statements as a TPA. And those were combined from multiple positions from our partners, some local policy positions, and then our long-range transportation plan for our goals, objectives, and measures in that. So instead of going that route, because it takes a lot of staff effort and consultants to sort of push those positions, we'll be working through our 27 MPOs in Florida through the MPO Advisory Council. And they have policy positions that they put out. We're to make sure that we're more engaged upfront in that process. And then they're the ones to really educate or advocate towards positions in the legislature for both state and federal government. Next is implement products, goal 4. One change we had here was we originally had a goal of supporting accelerated product delivery by partner agencies. That's always been a goal, and we are still trying to do that when we can find ways of doing it. It's pretty difficult to do that because money is all already accounted for the earlier years. So to find new funding that's available to program these products earlier has been tough to accelerate. We're changing that to assist municipalities with product identification and grant application submittals. So trying to get more applications into our competitive grant programs because sometimes they're not as competitive as it could be. So identifying up to 4 projects per year, helping locals who need those resources with submittals and identifying good projects to submit to our programs, or maybe even try to go after other discretionary grants at the federal level. Goal 5 is collaborate with partners. Earlier today, there was the mobility options video that was shown. So sort of a next step in that process is creating how to ride mobility options videos. Up to 5 videos, so there'd be shorter videos to just highlight specific modes of transportation and how to use it throughout Palm Beach County. I look forward to having those. And then another new one is conduct mobile tours with partner agencies to experience local transportation facilities and services. So we have a target of 4 tours throughout the year. We've done tours in the past to different places in the county. We've been to the Port of Palm Beach before and the airport, and it's been a few years. And it seems like something we can start back up and have those tours at different times in the year so people can start seeing more facilities and learn more about our transportation facilities and services in Palm Beach County. And then our last goal is administer the agency. Really the biggest highlight here for a change is that we are looking to update our board and committee onboarding resources. We have a handbook already that's available online, but looking to update that handbook, create a video, and host a workshop on what we do at the TPA and what a metropolitan planning organization is, and sort of how these committees all are structured and how they work. So looking to update all those onboarding resources for all those new members that we're receiving for all our different committees. So that's really the main updates I want to tell you, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Do we have any public comment? Thank you, Andrew.
No, Madam Chair.
Okay. So do we have any board comments or questions? No. I have one for you, Andrew. One on the last slide, it was administer the agency, and you talked about onboarding. This board, with our changes to our name, Vision Zero, we were going to expand this board to include safety personnel, police, fire, additional municipalities. You know, it'd be nice to see Belglade here, Riviera Beach, you know, and I was wondering where we are with doing, you know, moving forward with that, because I think it would be really helpful to have a more inclusive discussion.
Sure. Yes, I know we have a focus that we're trying to push and get some law enforcement or fire rescue and other safety administrators in the county on this committee. I don't know if we've made any progress in the past few months, though. So I know we have some contacts that we may and who have expressed interest. And Margie is looking at me like she does have some additional information. So I'm going to have her give that.
So we did reach out to a few of those agencies, but they haven't finalized anything. And then when Alyssa was here, she did have some contacts, but now we do have a new pedestrian and bicycle coordinator that can follow up on those items on behalf of the committee and make those connections. I know Valerie's been working as well to get more representation. And we did reach out to all of our governing board members to make sure that we had proper representation across all of our advisory committees.
Okay, so this year, maybe we could just bring them on a little bit at a time so it's not overwhelming. But yeah, I just think that it would, you know, if we're going down the road of let's have Vision Zero, I think everyone, all of the municipalities should be involved in that, in this discussion, because it's our region. And some of us are more fortunate because we can, you know, Wellington, Delray, the Gardens, you know, West Palm, I mean, Boca, we're all very fortunate that, you know, we can attend, but we need more rounded discussion for those in particular. Because, I mean, this is a great opportunity, and I hope that we can get more volunteers from some of the communities that need more connectivity with the rest of the region, because many of us use this as our opportunity to get grants, get connections, and it's sometimes unfair that some of our wealthier communities are positioned more to get those grants. So I feel a little guilty when we do that, but you know, it would be nice to have more of that discussion. Bruce, I'm going to call you Mr. Guyton. Is that okay? Because we have two Bruces.
That's okay. Or BG.
BG, okay.
I like to ditto what the chair is saying. I'm a resident of Riviera Beach, have been all my life. And I've been active in that community. And I think it is important that we have an all-inclusive discussion with the variety of economic, social representation, shall I say. So ditto to the chair, and I support what you're saying.
Maybe you can help Brian Ruescher identify some people in your community, and maybe you could bring it up to your elected officials, because they're going to have to appoint somebody. And that's been part, I know when Alyssa was here, she was trying to get some law enforcement, and they work strange hours and things like that. So anything anybody can help, if you live in a community, you know, people, it took forever for us to get Mr. Goodenough. It took probably 2 years to get somebody from the disabled community to join our group. So, you know, we make better decisions when we have a well-rounded discussion. So, all right. Thanks. So do I have a motion to recommend approval of the fiscal year 2023 strategic plan? You have a second, Mr. Guyton? First,
second.
Joanne is the second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. Motion passed. Informational items, there are none. And there's also some administrative items, but on the agenda, on the items, but there are no presentations unless anyone has any questions or comments. Those are items, we're under four administrative items in the agenda, and there's a few items there. Do we have any public comment on those?
There are no public comments at this time, Madam Chair.
Does anybody have any comment on the administrative items? Seeing none, it looks like our next meeting, we have no August meeting. So don't come August. September 8th is our next meeting. And we'll see everyone then. And welcome again, Mr. Guyton, and your alternate. And Brian, who's in his new position. Great job. Thank you.
Thank and you. I shall deliver your message to Yash, my good friend.
Okay. Thanks, everybody. Have a good one.
Take care.